Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser here with you on this Tuesday morning. And we welcome in our friend Caroline Fenton to the program, host of Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. You can check out every morning starting at 11 o'clock here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Caroline, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Happy Game 5 Day.
Happy Game 5 Day. It feels like it's a long way away, and that's because it is. It's 14 hours from now.
It's basically tomorrow.
It is. We'll see if the Predators can stay alive tonight. Rex Road very excited about the late puck drop tonight.
I know. I forgot about that.
Sorry for the reminder.
Sad again.
We'll get into game five here in just a few minutes. Caroline wrecking the mood for Rex Road immediately.
7:01 a.m. That's got to be a new record.
It's good stuff. Good stuff. So, Caroline, the NFL draft now is mercifully behind us. What did you make of what the Titans did at the draft, particularly with their first pick in J.C. Latham and their second pick in T'Vondre Sweat?
Yeah, you know, the J.C. Latham pick initially, you know, it was a shock, mostly because we had been talking about every possible scenario that the Titans could have, you know, gone down. But we hardly ever mentioned J.C. Latham. My only thing is, and I got ripped for this, and I don't know why, and this is the frustrating reality about the NFL draft is, at a time when, you know, when everything is up in the air, when we don't know how any of these picks are going to turn out, it's really easy to look at the glass half full. But I think it's also fair to have questions and fair to have speculation of, hey, you need a left tackle, and you say he's going to play left tackle, but he played right tackle in college. You know, what gives you confidence that he can move to the other side? I know that Bill Callahan has done it in the past of moving tackles from right to the left side, and it's been a fairly seamless transition. And yes, that gives me encouragement and that gives me optimism. Just Bill Callahan being in the building gives me encouragement and optimism for this offensive line moving forward. I think the offensive line is already better because of Bill Callahan. But what if he can't move to the left side? I mean, Brian Callahan did bring that up in a press conference on Thursday night. You know, hey, if he can't work at left, we'll just move him to right. Both tackles are important. And you're right. Both tackles are important. But what happens in the process of you figuring out if J.C. Latham can play left tackle or not? What if he can't? Does Will Levis just get killed in the process? If J.C. Latham can't play left tackle, then who's playing right tackle? Or excuse me, then who's playing left tackle? So those are all the questions that I have. And frankly, I didn't want to step away from the first round of the draft with the 7th overall pick with questions about who is playing left tackle if they did, in fact, draft a left tackle. And in terms of T'Vondre Sweat, you asked me about T'Vondre Sweat too. I'm excited about the player, but also questions. Had the DWI 2 weeks before the NFL draft. He struggled with staying at a consistent playing weight at Texas. I think he played at like 366, which is just crazy that the Titans drafted 700 pounds of beef in the first two rounds. So excited about the player. I know that the Titans are excited about the player, that they could not move off of 38 because they could not just even risk not having T'Vondre Sweat even longer. And look, great. If you love a guy, then you're going to take him. But I hope that he's able to one, stay at a consistent playing weight, and two, stay focused.
So do you think this could be a good football team next fall?
I think it has the makings of being a better football team. You know, good is subjective. Are they a Super Bowl contender? No. And that's okay. We didn't expect them to be. I think that we'll break it down. I think the wide receiving core with the addition of Calvin Ridley is better. I don't feel great about the tight ends just going into this season with Chig Okonkwo, who struggled to catch the football last season, and Josh Wiley, who struggled to stay healthy. The offensive line is better just because of Lloyd Cushenberry, but also better than historically one of the worst offensive lines in the history of football. You know, that's a low bar there. In terms of defense, you don't lose Danico Autry and get better. We'll see what T'Vondre Sweat can do, but corners, hands down, feel a lot better about that.
Oh yeah,
don't feel better about safety. So I think that you've kind of taken, in some ways, a step forward and a step back, but also, you know, what does the addition of J.C. like? Can J.C. Latham be a Pro Bowl left tackle? I hope. I don't know. We'll see. So a lot of it is wait and see. Can this be a good football team? I think it can be a 10-7, 9-8 football team. That's what I think is a not necessarily ceiling, but a fair expectation, glass half full, optimistic expectation.
So, Caroline, I've been really surprised, and maybe I shouldn't be. Maybe this is just ignorance on my part. I've been really surprised by, like, the national narrative out there about Will Levis. Like, there's a lot of people that just automatically think that Will Levis is terrible. I saw it again over the weekend of, like, why would the Titans even try to build around Will Levis? And I'm like, guys, he's played 1 year of football. We have no idea whether or not he's going to be any good. Are you surprised that the national narrative on him seems to be that he is just not good and the Titans are just screwed with Will Levis at their quarterback? Because I've seen a whole lot of that this offseason.
Yeah, I saw some article, and now I'm frustrated that it's escaping me exactly where I saw it. But I saw the conversation was how Mason Rudolph and Will Levis are going to be competing for a starting role in training camp. Like, what? Mason Rudolph? If that's the case, then Jesus, take the wheel. But I am surprised that it is so negative on Will Levis, where my approach is he could be a franchise quarterback or he might be a career backup. Like, I don't know. I need to see more. I haven't seen enough from Will Levis. I've seen some really exciting, encouraging things. Obviously, the Atlanta game, the comeback at the end of the Miami game. But let's not forget the reason why the Titans had to come back was because Levis threw a pick six. So there's been some positive things. There have been some rookie mistakes. What does he look like with better protection, assuming that he does have better protection this season? That's what I want to see. What does he look like when he's going into this season, knowing that he is the starter, knowing that he's the guy? That's what I want to see. I'm reserving, you know, too much judgment on Will Levis right now. For right now, his grade is incomplete. I've also felt the same kind of sentiment toward Brian Callahan. Like, I was listening to SiriusXM NFL radio, and they were talking about, you know, well, why would you feel good about your coach? Why'd they even fire Mike Vrabel in the first place? And I'm thinking, did we watch the same football team over the past couple of years, two losing seasons in a row? Why is it so egregious that the Titans would even think about moving on from Mike Vrabel? So there's also, you know, it's fair, he's a first-time head coach. I understand that, but I think there's a wait-and-see period with Brian Callahan in addition to the quarterback. I mean, coach and quarterback are the two most important positions in football.
Okay, this Levis question. I just popped open Brugler's 2025 mock. So I'm gonna ask you both to guess Titans placement in the draft and pick. See if either of you can get it.
Placement in the draft. I'll go fourth. Pick. I mean, the way you're phrasing this makes me think it's a quarterback, and I'm trying to think of who it would be. I have no idea.
Caroline?
I'm going to also go fourth. I'll say Luther Burden, the wide receiver out of Missouri.
Okay.
Man, Luther Burden. That's going to be like that's gonna be nice. But how about two and Carson Beck?
Okay. Right.
Oh, goodness gracious.
So there you go. People think the Titans are going to stink, and they think that they're going to stink, and that Levis is going to stink, and that the year from now they're going to be right back into the quarterback sweepstakes.
There you go.
You know how you know how bad he has to be this year? Like how bad Levis has to be for them? To me, I mean, pretty bad.
But if he is so bad for the Titans to be the 31st worst team in the National Football League, like, you probably should be drafting a quarterback, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess those two things do go together.
I don't think he's going to be that bad.
And also, I'm with you, Robbie.
Carson Beck?
I mean, I will say this, though.
Where you're
a year ago, people talking about Jaden Daniels. Exactly. I was like, really? And, I mean, a year before the draft before Joe Burrow's senior year. Anybody's saying Joe Burrow number one overall pick? Yeah, what? Yeah. What are you talking about? So I guess
transfer quarterback.
Blow us away, Carson Beck.
What does Dane Brugler have going? Who's his first pick? Just curious. Is Carson Beck the first quarterback off the board?
Yeah.
Michael.
Michael Williams from Georgia, okay. The D lineman,
all right.
Number one overall.
A lot of Georgia love.
And hey, the Panthers. I'm with that. I'm with the Panthers stinking again.
I have too. Caroline, what do you make of, obviously, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday on your show, about as much of a gut punch as you could possibly try to withstand if you're the Predators in game four. You've got game five coming up tonight. I mean, I will say, like, if you win game five from a team morale locker room standpoint after that, I think it's easy to talk yourself into, all right, well, you're back home for game six, and then anything can happen in game seven. But tonight is really the tough one for me, Caroline. Like, there's going to be so much energy in that building. You're coming off just an incredibly disappointing, heartbreaking loss. What do you make of the Predators, their chances tonight to extend this series?
Oh, I don't feel great, Robbie. I really don't, and I wish that I could be more optimistic for you. I said before the game even started, I said, if they lose this game, it's over. I mean, you dig yourself into a 3-1 hole. The Predators have played the best hockey that they've played in this series in games three and games four against backup goalies at home, and they couldn't find a way to win. So why would that give me optimism that they could win three consecutive games? Even if they win tonight, and yeah, you can start to talk yourself into, okay, you're back home at Bridgestone Arena, you know, you're feeling more confident, and maybe Vancouver got ahead of themselves, you know, pulling away with a 3-1 series lead. Sure, yeah, absolutely. But right now, it doesn't feel great because you're not getting enough from the guys that carried you to this point. And if you're not getting it from the guys that carried you to this point, then how are they going to carry you through the playoffs? And I mean, you know, Josi and Nyquist and Saros has been good, not great. You know, Forsberg he's a goal and assist so far throughout the throughout the playoffs. But even still, even with that production, even with Forsberg finding the net as much as he had so far in the series, he still hasn't been Forsberg. He still hasn't been the presence that he has been throughout the entirety of the season and really mostly through the first half of the season. So it was a gut punch on what day was that? Sunday.
Yep.
And it feels over.
It does.
Yes.
It does feel over. We'll see if they can extend the series tonight. Going to be a late puck drop tonight, as Joe Rexroad has mercifully been reminded by Caroline Fenton. Caroline, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to be with us, and we'll talk to you next week.
What a way to end it, guys. My bad. Sorry.
No, it's actually good.
Negativity.
I mean, if I would have forgotten to take a nap today.
I wish you could have seen his face. You know, he's like, oh, God. I forgot. 9 o'clock.
I thought today was Wednesday.
It can be whatever day of the week
I thought
want
it was over already.
Just awesome. Thank you, Caroline.
Thanks, Caroline.
All right, thanks, guys.
Caroline Fenton joins us every Tuesday morning at 7 o'clock here on Robbie and Rex Show. We'll take your thoughts on what Caroline had to say, more of your thoughts on the Titans, and we will get into Game 5 between the Predators and Canucks this hour as well. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. I got some tickets to give away. A 4-pack of tickets to see the Nashville Sounds take on the Norfolk Tides at First Horizon Park on Thursday. Be caller 5, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller 5 will win a 4-pack of tickets to see the Sounds take on the Norfolk Tides at First Horizon Park this Thursday. Which, by the way, it's going to be like 88, 89 degrees Thursday, which I'm very much looking forward to.
Oh, my goodness.
Love it.
Let's go.
Love it. Good stuff. Thanks, Caroline Fenton, for being with us in the last segment. We're taking your thoughts on the Titans on our text line. Thoughts on the Preds as well, 615-737-1025, our phone number. The Levis stuff is interesting. I mean, we've gone through like the national perspective on him, and now that you've brought it up, like I'm trying to like – it would have to be so spectacularly bad for him, in my opinion, for them to even consider quarterback next year. Not only because of who they're invested in him, but also like everybody you ask, and it's kind of reminiscent of the 2021 quarterback group. Everybody you ask thinks the quarterback group next year is terrible.
Right. Without knowing all kinds of information, if you got to that draft and you reached for a quarterback for need, oh, man. That's just that's what bad organizations do. So yes, I think people are going to be wrong on that. But also, I think people are going to be wrong on that because I don't think Levis is going to be a disaster. Again, I think that if you did a pie, you know, and it's like there's a sliver of like he surpasses Patrick Mahomes as the best quarterback in the league. A sliver to me, it's like it's a pretty small sliver of he's a disastrously bad quarterback.
I would agree.
Most of the pie is to me good or pretty good. Like that, you know, good, pretty good, or average.
Yeah.
You know, however you want to whatever words you want to use.
Well,
I would say middle range. And if you're in the middle range, you are going to be the quarterback the next year.
Right. Like I would say, like, you know, the elite great pie sliver is pretty small too. But
exactly,
if you're,
they're both tiny slivers of amazing or awful.
Right.
And everything else is going to have him back at quarterback the next year. But we'll see. There are some interesting texts related to Tavondre Sweat on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com.
Okay.
In the pre-draft press conference, Rand said they took players off the draft board for poor character reasons. If a DWI by Tavondre 3 weeks before the draft isn't a reason to be removed from the big board, what is? Well, first of all, and actually Rand kind of corrected me yesterday, and it was a good point he made because I asked him about the visits. How much are these visits to, like, clear up questions? Like he said, it's like not necessarily questions about a person, but sometimes it's also just like, okay, let's talk scheme. Let's drill down a little bit more. Or sometimes it's like, yep, this player fits everything we know, good, clean. That's what I mean by clean. You know, clean prospect isn't just character, personality. You know, it's also fit and all that stuff. But to answer that question, there's plenty of things that could. Like I've said, a DWI is obviously, it's serious. It's a mistake. People make mistakes. But my problem with it is you made that judgment when you know you are under so much scrutiny.
Yeah, you're in the middle of this process.
Yeah. So, but to answer the question, there's plenty of things, including just like don't feel like someone would fit in your locker room. That's not a quote-unquote poor character reason, but it's a personality reason, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the idea that if you wouldn't remove – someone from that, then I guess you just let anything go if that's what you're getting at. No, I don't think that's the right way to look at it. Someone else texted, can you please tell me about the Sweat baggage? I understand the DWI, but Jared was saying there's a lot more to it. The weight thing, et cetera, et cetera, is a long text. I ain't got time for all that. Congratulations or sorry for your trouble. But bottom line is, I think it's all tied to judgment, and it's, if he did indeed play in the 380s last year, and yes, Dane Brugler had that in his report that people believe he was playing in the 380s. I mean, you're not playing in the 380s in the NFL.
No.
And you're not going to be what they need you to be, what you need to be as a player. So it's just all the judgment thing, maturity, judgment. Are you going to do everything you can to maximize? I think if Tavondre Sweat is going to be locked in and doing everything he can to maximize, so I think it's going to be a fantastic pick. And if not, then yeah, it's going to be a big mistake. You know, there's also a lot of talk about how they should have dropped down. Apparently Carthon said somewhere that, you know, that someone told him they were about to take him right after them. You know, I mean, I agree with the idea that, man, with all these people ranking him in the hundreds, could you not have dropped down a few spots and still got him? I totally, and then added a little draft capital. I totally get that idea. But obviously they did not feel comfortable doing so.
Obviously not. Look, I like the idea of identifying prospects in the draft that you absolutely love and sticking to that. Like I like that. I like that idea. Only problem with that is like when you identify the wrong prospects, right? Like we'll see what happens there, but I've said it. The idea of trading back, I love the discussion. I always am here for the idea of getting more picks. But to me, if you come away with elite players, that's really the only thing I care about when it comes to the draft. So if J.C. Latham is an elite tackle and Sweat ends up being an elite player up the middle for you on the defensive side of the ball, I'm cool with you not trading back to go get more picks, man. That's fine with me. Just go get – make sure that when you're making these picks that they're the right people. And look, they're going to miss. Like, Rand Carthon's going to miss on some picks at some point here. He's going to probably nail some picks here too. They're really good. That's part of it. Everybody has their hits and their misses here. But I think if you've identified him at 38 as a can't-miss prospect, to me, you better feel pretty good about the work ethic and the maturity stuff, that's at a level where it needs to be. Otherwise, you're not picking him at 38.
Right, and it's good that they went down there and spent all that extra time. And as he said at the press conference, you know, it's not just to talk more to him, but to find out more about his family and his support group. And because it's like And sometimes it's like you got to call some other people to get some help with someone, you know. So they invested the time and effort into someone they obviously thought would be a great fit. And remember, these rankings for Sweat, like Brugler or whoever, I forget, what, 119 or 149 or something like that. Like, a lot of these rankings, as soon as the DWI happened, he dropped like 60, 70 spots
right.
with a lot of these people. So just as a prospect ranking, he was drafted right around where he was. It's all about what he's going to do now that he's in the NFL, you know, basically on a daily basis. And I can relate to, you know, I can relate to, do not eat that cookie. I mean, Keys is over here trying to, you know, trying to throw donuts at us.
Yes.
I'm not going to do
it.
I'm
being very
helpful. But I feel the pull. I feel it's like the tractor beam in Star Wars. I feel it, but I'm not going to do it.
I might do it.
We'll see. Yeah, well, you're not in the same. My playing weight is, I'm way past the playing weight here.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, we'll get into Preds and Canucks. Game number 5 coming up. Can the Preds stay alive and force a game 6 back at home? Or does it all come to an end tonight? We'll take your thoughts on that on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to MedicalHouseCalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We'll have Adam Vingan coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators and the Canucks in Game 5 tonight. Joe Pret's trying to stay alive, trying to force a Game 6 at Bridgestone Arena, which would be on Friday. Obviously, they're coming off just a terrible loss, just an absolute gut punch of a loss. They're down 3-1 in the series. The odds are stacked against them at this point. I mean, they would have to win 3 in a row to advance. 2 of those would be in Vancouver. And, oh, by the way, if you win tonight, you travel all the way back to Nashville. And if you win that game, you travel all the way back to Vancouver. Now, Vancouver does too, but that seems like a lot to ask for the Predators to win 3 in a row. But we'll see. It starts tonight. You know, I caught up with Brunette and Ryan McDonough yesterday. I mean, they feel good about the way they played for the most part the last 2 games. I think they should feel good about the way they've played. But this time of year, I mean, it's about closing it out. And Predators had about as good of an opportunity as you can ask for to close one out the other night. Weren't able to do it. I would imagine you're going to see Vancouver step it up tonight, and we'll see if the Predators are able to respond and hang in there in Game 5.
Yeah, look, I don't want to say that this game, you know, defines the season, because I'm still defining the season as overachieving. But the way they played down the stretch, not just the point streak, again, they finished 25-3, and we thought that's what they are as a team. And I think the funny thing is, of course, as we've talked about, I mean, a lot of what this series has showed is, like, them, they found their game when it came back to Nashville, and they could be and should be in a much better position in this series. But this is, to me, an ultimate test of how mentally tough you are and how you can find your game in a tough situation, because I think the Canucks are going to be buzzing. That building is going to be insane tonight.
Yeah, and look, you know, you got to move on quick. You know, people were really upset the other night after the game about some of the stuff the Predators said in the locker room in Game 4 of, like, you got to flush it. It's hockey. It happens sometimes. And Philip Forsberg was, like, going out of his way to basically not talk about anything that happened in Game 4 and was looking ahead to Game 5 of, yeah, you got to just go ahead and turn the page. And a lot of Predators fans are really upset by that. I don't know that there's anything in that scenario, given the way that game ended, that you could possibly say that's going to appease your fan base at that point. I mean, it just kind of is what it is.
Yeah, I think basically you just want – I mean, you want words that match up with how you feel. So you want, like, that was the worst loss ever. Yeah. I'm disgusted. And sometimes you get that. Sometimes a player in a situation like that will have that emotion, and I think that's more satisfying for fans, right? Because that's how you feel.
Exactly.
But, yeah, for the most part, I mean, basically the one guy who – I think Forsberg and Yossi kind of handled it matter-of-factly, like they typically handle everything. the one guy you could see it on was Nyquist. For sure. Were those the three people that were made available?
Nyquist, Forsberg. Yeah. Nyquist, Forsberg, and Yossi.
Yeah. So that's the thing you have to remember, too. I mean, we can open up this can of worms if you want. You know, when the Titans lose a playoff game to the Cincinnati Bengals, every single person in the Tennessee Titans locker room is going to be available.
That is correct.
Like, you know that you will talk to Ryan Tannehill about his three interceptions. You can talk to every person on that team. There's going to be an entire open room for a half hour. Everybody's available. You will get way more reaction, way more comments, and way more diversity of comments in that situation. The Nashville Predators made three people available after the game the other night. Did not make Colton Sissons available. He had a key play. Again, I don't think you should blame Colton Sissons, but that's a guy in a playoff game who missed a shot to end that game, right? And so, like, so remember that if you're mad about, like, what people are saying in a situation in the Nashville Predators, I think it's an NHL thing to some extent, but it's certainly a Predators thing. They don't make a whole room available. They should, but they don't.
I agree. Yep, I agree. Look, you've said this before. If the National Football League does it, other leagues should probably follow suit after that. It seems to work right out pretty well for them.
Or we'll keep going down this road. Yeah, this could have been a good rant. I screwed up. You know, I covered the Tennessee Volunteers, you know, college athletes, in the NCAA tournament. So when they lost a heartbreaker to Purdue in Detroit a few weeks ago, the entire room was available for about a half hour. So you could talk to anybody you wanted, and you can go up to them multiple times and ask them any question you wanted about anything. And that's how you get better coverage of sporting events.
I agree. Do you think Tommy Novak is in the lineup tonight? It's game five at this point. They've not made any adjustments to the forwards in terms of lineup adjustments. They've made one on defense because they had to with Spencer Stastny out, with Fabbro coming back in. Do you think there is a lineup change at forward tonight?
I'll guess yes.
Okay.
But it's close.
Do you think it's Novak that comes out?
Probably. And I think I would – see, it's really tough, though. It's like Parsonen has not played for this team in so long.
I agree.
It seems like years ago that he started on the top line.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just amazing to think about. But I also feel like – like you can see what the case would be for him to be in there. Also, I think you're the one who first mentioned this. I could see maybe Novak on the wing. Does that matter? But then who comes out? I mean, who's untouchable? To me, the whole McCarron line is. I mean, I think those guys are doing a heck of a job. Jankowski. I mean, really, it comes down to. I mean, and I think Bevilier, although some people may be overstating Bevilier,
it's happening
here
a
on the station. But Bevilier's been good. Zucker's been really good.
Zucker's been really good.
I mean, Novak's the only guy, right?
Novak is the forward they have that is tremendously underachieving. There's,
yeah.
And I think some people think that I'm being a little bit too harsh on Novak. I don't really care. I'm just telling you what I see. He's been bad. And I don't know what other way to put it. He's been bad. So he's the one guy that I look at that has been tremendously underwhelming in this series from a forward standpoint.
So I'm trying to talk through if you moved him, then and I guess you could just move him and move someone and not put anybody new in.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess Parson in center, does that give you any sort of help?
You could go Glass. Like, if you wanted to go Cody Glass, you could put him in the middle. My guess is no. That there's not a change tonight.
Okay.
I don't know that, but my guess, like, you know, I thought the perfect opportunity to do it would have been before game four. Novak was totally invisible in game three. Andrew Burnett clearly was not happy with the way he was playing, and I thought the time to do it probably would have been game four. You know, Novak didn't play well in the last game. I thought he was probably a little bit better than he was in game three. So my guess is – there's probably not a change tonight. But, like, I don't hate the idea of throwing Parsonen in there. And look, I don't have the expectation that Parsonen would come in and he's like a series flipper or anything like that. But he is a big guy. He does have a certain skill level to him. And he's played well in Milwaukee down the stretch. Now, there's a big difference between regular season American Hockey League hockey and the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. I am keenly aware of that. I'm just saying, like, if you wanted to lean into the idea of trying to put yourself a lineup at forward that has a better chance of getting to the inside, Parsonen with his frame has a better chance of getting to the inside and kind of muscling his way through that Vancouver defense, in my opinion, than Novak does, who for the most part has seemed totally unwilling to even try to go there in this series.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. Yeah, the more the more I think about it, I think you're probably going to end up being right. I don't think they're going to do anything. But certainly, the physicality, the size, it's intriguing. Again, the thing is, I mean, that line has not been effective, so, you know, you want to try to change it up. But, like, again, last game, actually, like the last game's play, the way you played, that's not a lineup change game.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why I don't think it's anything's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, I think they're probably going to go out with the same thing.
I mean, you're 6-on-5 D zone coverage is a disaster. So you work on that, you know.
God, can you imagine the thought of Preds fans tonight? Like, if they get in this situation again where they're protecting a lead and Vancouver's 6-on-5, the Predators fans would be like, oh, my God, not again. Well, right, like, when it happens tonight.
It's like all of a sudden that's become like facing a 5-on-3 against Edmonton or something, you know.
Like, it's like just get up by 7 goals for no other reason than you won't even have to worry about the 6-on-5 at that point.
Yeah, that might be a good idea for the Preds tonight.
See if you can get up by 7.
But, yeah, I mean, really, you take 3 minutes and 51 seconds away of that. Well, and whatever the heck happened in overtime. Well,
think about this series. 12 seconds in game one, you go from up 2-1 to down 3-2. 4 minutes in game four, you go from up 3-1 to losing 4-3. That's a couple of pretty quick spans of time there that Vancouver has totally flipped this series. Right.
Or they're fighting for their survival tonight. Yep. And basically everybody's penciling the Preds into the next round.
Yep. And that's what it is this time of year in the Stanley Cup playoffs. It's little bitty plays, little bitty stretches of time that add up to gigantic consequences. And that's what we've seen so far in this series. We'll see if the Preds can stay alive tonight. Again, we'll have Adam Vingan coming up at 8 o'clock, get his thoughts on the Preds and the Canucks coming up in Game 5. Coming up next, it's time for the Rex Rant. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Like, wow, that's interesting because we have some people looking at some photos that are just, I don't know, measuring cheek size. So, fly is open, let's go pee.
That's right. Gotta watch out for that Nick Kieser. Never quite know what he's going to clip up here. In the office.
I don't even remember what that was. What was I talking about?
Oh, I was talking about, yeah.
The cheek size?
We were talking about Traylon Burks today, right?
Yeah.
Wow. Keezer's on his game.
Yeah. Anything you say can be. I mean, play that Kaharsky drop.
Do it now.
Do it. That's got to be at your fingertips, isn't it? The access to find. Don't you have that as like a quick key? See, Kaharsky.
I smoke weed constantly.
Oh, that is a fantastic. Can I have the Jared one? You don't play the Jared one enough. It's better than you think it is.
He seems determined. He's even shaking his head right now. He doesn't want to play it.
Yeah. This needs to be Jared's Scarlet Letter.
Scarlet Letter.
And there are many options. Don't get me wrong.
There are.
But like this one, to me, to completely make up a situation to open your show to criticize someone for, I mean, come on. Like, that's special, even for him. Oh, you're not going to do it, Keezer? I'm waiting
like
for you. I'm waiting for you, Keezer. He's lost it. He doesn't care about it. Seriously, like, this needs to be.
It's about to turn into a Keezer rant pretty quickly.
Jeez. Nicked off. All right, well, I guess I'm kind of just pissed off about a lot of things to do with this series. So you've brought something up, which I think we can get to. I'll reiterate really quickly. In professional sports, after a game, especially in the playoffs when the media corps is basically tripled from what it normally is.
Maybe quadrupled, but yeah.
The entire room should be open. Everybody should be available at the same time for a certain amount of time, and that's that. I mean, it is. And that's something that at the very top level of the NHL should be a priority and should be enforced. So I'm going to look into this because it's really enough of this. So that's all I'll say about it for now. The other night I asked a question about Soros to Brunette. And really it was kind of one of those questions I asked because in my mind I really don't blame Soros for any of those goals the other night, but I just wanted to see what he would say.
Yeah.
But when you ask that question, people think that you're blaming the goalie. So there was a loud snicker from the room behind me when I asked that question. I'm pretty sure it was from somebody who covers Vancouver. I don't know who. And I was like, so you think I'm like some idiot who is blaming Soros for the game? Yes.
Okay.
Which brings me to Vancouver fans. I mean, actually, like I had this column the other day at The Athletic, and I mean, I wrote freaking Connor Hughes instead of Quinn Hughes. Okay. And it's a bad mistake. And I'm sorry, but like I was accused of, like, instead of proofreading my own work, being at a Trump rally by a Vancouver fan. Okay. Like, and there was a phrase in there from someone who said, can't wait until the hockey illiterati.
Heard that one before.
Yes. The hockey illiterati. Guys, I mean, all fans complain if like if they don't like an icing call or if they don't like a penalty call. Like, Purdue basketball fans are as knowledgeable about basketball. I mean, John Wooden played there, okay? It's the middle of Indiana. Those people freaking bitch about the most blatant foul calls called on their players every single time. Like, it's a federal crime that the whistle was blown. Yeah. Nashville Predators fans know hockey. Please stop with the stupid crap about, you know, people in the South not knowing hockey because it's the sacred Canadian game.
I will stop it. Like, the one takeaway, and look, Vancouver clearly has a very passionate fan base. That's a good thing. They do have a certain segment of their fan base that's about as insufferable as it gets. That's one thing I think I've relearned in this series. They got some insufferable members of that fan base.
And then we'll go to Preds fans because, you know, I want to make sure that everybody gets ripped here equally, or not equally, but at least to some extent. And you were talking about this. We're back to the Roman Josi we're in the sea.
Yeah,
we're back to that.
We're back in there.
Yeah,
a lot of people very upset at Roman Josi after some of his post game comments in Game 4.
Yeah, which comment in particular did he say that was like was like a problem? Again, I understand the idea of like I want someone to express my anger in this moment.
Right.
I don't want everything's going to be okay. I don't want we'll move on or that's hockey. I want this is disgusting, and it's unacceptable. I understand that, but I don't understand what he would have said that would specifically bother people.
Well, I think it's my fault. I tweeted out a quote.
Oh, here we go.
This is what Roman Josi said after the game. Quote, it's a tough ending. That doesn't happen too often, but that's hockey, right? Sometimes it goes your way. Sometimes it doesn't. We got to forget about this one pretty quick. That was the quote from Roman Josi. To which there's a, don't like that one. Seems to happen to us fairly often. How is this the captain of the team? A guy with a C designation shouldn't talk like that. Maybe it's time for that C to land on another number.
Oh, boy.
I mean, it's reply after reply after reply. Josi doesn't deserve the C. Can you imagine a worse quote from your captain after that debacle? Weak-minded individual, which was maybe my favorite response out of this whole thing. A lot of people upset about Roman Josi.
Were those comments, like, right in the moment? Like, were they were, like, right
oh, after? It's still coming in. Like, it's been a steady stream of comments on Roman Yossi's post-game comments since it happened.
Beauvillier told me that's the way she goes sometimes.
There you go.
He said that twice.
Okay. Do you have a problem with that?
No, not really.
I mean, that's, again, I, as a media person, prefer better quotes. And as a fan of a team, you know, look, I mean, you're wrong that I'm little Joey Rexrode who's becoming a Lions fan again, but I will say that I wanted, after they lost to the 49, I wanted some Lions player to say, our coach is a freaking idiot.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever noticed that our coach is an idiot? But no one said that.
They didn't.
Like you, I mean, of course, I get that you're emotional. You want those comments, but that's not what makes a good captain. I mean, you know, like that's satisfying in the moment, but I just the whole Yossi captain thing we've talked about before. I just think that he's a nice guy who could be like a supermodel.
Yeah.
And so people want a toothless brute who screams at people to be their captain.
Yeah.
Again, I get the comparison to Shea Weber. I get it. But as we've also talked about, and Shea Weber has told, I think, both of us this individually, like the way that he goes about it is actually the way Shea Weber did. He wasn't he wasn't a yeller or screamer.
Now, one thing I will say, and this you can think of whatever you want to about this, I can guarantee you that had they lost the game the way they did the other night, Shea Weber's media press conference would have lasted about 30 seconds.
So it would have been like Gus Nyquist.
Yeah, like it would have been about 30 seconds.
So people would have liked that better. Okay, and I get it. But like nothing Roman Yossi, I mean, in that moment and in every moment since the end of that game, the Preds are in get rid of it, man.
Yeah.
Right?
They're in survival mode now.
Like if you fans can stew on that, we can bitch about it for multiple days until the next game comes along. That's fine. But if you're these guys, if you are worried about that, yeah, you go back through the video and hey, Phillip and you know whatever happened there and the
I gotta figure that out.
Yeah, sure. But like as far as everything else about it, you have to have that mindset. I actually would want my captain to be like, "What's the next game? What can we do to win it?" Right?
Yeah. Look, it's easy. It's easy to look at Yossi. I think exactly what you said is bang on. Like Yossi is not like a hard-nosed, gritty, physical player, right? Now, he did just about get his ear chopped off the other night and came back and played. Yeah. So there's a level of toughness.
And he's throwing his body in front of pucks.
He doesn't get a lot of credit for it. But, yeah, like he's not Shea Weber putting people to the ice out there. So it is different from that perspective, and I think it opens itself up. The only thing I can go on when it comes to, like, judging a captain – number one, how do they play? Because I think that is important. Like, if you're going to be a leader of a team, you don't necessarily have to be the best player, but I think you do need to be a pretty good player if you're going to be a leader
of
the team.
You got to be one of the best players.
And then number two, like, what do his teammates think about it? Like, that's the other thing. And
do they listen to him?
On the record, off the record, whatever. Whenever you ask anybody about Roman Yossi, it's always the same thing. Everybody loves him. Everybody loves the way he leads. Everybody loves the way he plays. And I don't get the vibe from anybody that that's just like lip service. So if that's how they feel about him, like what else do you really need out of your captain, right? Isn't that what it's about?
Yeah. Well, when a loss like that happens, some people want outrage from him. So I get that to a point, but it really doesn't matter. Ralph from Clarksville, people have to realize he isn't Mike Fisher. They think he's a soft-spoken pretty boy. I don't. Who do they think we need to wear the C? By the way, I didn't cover Mike Fisher nearly as long as you did, but
Fisher was
did Mike
very
Fisher
soft-spoken.
Ever throw any rage out at any time at all?
I can't remember. I don't know if he's ever been mad in his life.
Yeah, he was a good solid a good player,
but he could fight.
A good solid guy.
He could fight and he was physical.
Okay, that's true. The physicality of his game is a difference. But yeah, as far as how he went about his business publicly with us or anything, yeah, very similar.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Adam Vingan. We'll get his thoughts on the Predators and the Canucks. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game.